Gentas presents The Imperialists by Vivian Stewart, performed by Simon Slater.
What's Australia? A big thirsty, hungry wilderness, with one or two cities for convenience of foreign speculators, populated mostly by mongrel sheep and partly by fools. Henry Lawson, Australian poet and storyteller. One who would travel this country for pleasure would go to hell for a pastime. R.T. Morris, Australian geographer.
Australian history does not read like history, but like the most beautiful lies. It is full of surprises and adventures and incongruities and contradictions and incredibilities. But they all happened.
Mark Twain, an American tourist. Prologue. If you ask me, sir, said Lieutenant James Camber, there are some parts of the British Empire that I'd just as soon give back to the natives. Captain Andrew Broome, Royal Navy, turned to his junior officer and chuckled.
I think you have a point there, James, though I doubt the Colonial Office would see it your way, or the British people either.
Standing at the rail of his ship, HMS Durable, Captain Broome took in the scene before him. The vessel lay at anchor in Port William Inlet on East Falkland Island. On shore, the few clapboard houses of the town of Stanley overlooked the harbour, their roofs painted in gay colours, as if to offset the drab, chill landscape of this outpost of the British Empire. For the first time since Durable had steamed into the area of the Falklands, the sun was shining, and the captain was surprised to find that there was, after all, some colour on these islands in the South Atlantic. Although Captain Broome, an Australian by birth, had been baptised Andrew, the rust-red hair inherited from his father had given him the nicknames by which he had always been known, Rufus or Rufy. Indeed, he could not recall the last time anyone had called him Andrew, and he suspected that some of his fellow officers and men did not even know his true given name. On deck, he was a tall, formidable figure, bulky and snug in his winter blues and cold weather gear. His great coat collar was turned up, and he stood with his hands in his pockets, his visored cap pulled low over his eyes. Even in the summertime, it could be chill in the latitudes beyond 50 degrees south.
It takes a sailor to appreciate the extent of the Empire, doesn't it, James? Rufy commented.
That it does, sir, the lieutenant answered.
As for me, Rufy went on, I'll be glad when this voyage is over and we've reached home port in Sydney. Do you know that in my 30-odd years in the Navy, I've barely set foot in my native land? My family are mostly in Sydney now, and I haven't seen some of them more than half a dozen times in all those years. It'll be good to be back there.
I can imagine it will be, sir, the lieutenant replied. Then, seeing a hint of motion at the coaling station on the Stanley Wharves, he lifted his binoculars.
Signal, sir. They're ready for us.
Very well, Rufy said. Make preparations to get underway, lieutenant.
The Durable was a Havoc-class torpedo boat destroyer. Although most Royal Navy men referred to her and her class simply as destroyers. She was 180 feet long, displaced 320 tons, and mounted 3 6-pounders and a 12-pounder, in addition to her 3 18-inch torpedo tubes. She had been built to serve defensively against enemy torpedo boats and offensively as a torpedo boat to attack larger ships. Why a war vessel was assigned to duty in these cold and largely empty South Atlantic waters would have been a mystery to her captain and her crew, except that wherever the British Empire was, there too was the Royal Navy. The Empire in the Falklands was evidenced by the Union Jack flying over the coaling station in Stanley. The Empire extended even farther south, across the Drake Passage to the South Shetland Islands, just above the Antarctic Circle and, at least in claims, beyond that to Antarctica itself.